Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now back in making his 10th appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate, the Steelers legends and one of our all-time favorite guests and TNT Guest Hall of Famer, Rocky Blyer. Let me remind you a little bit about Rocky's background. He's from Appleton, Wisconsin. At Xavier High School, he starred in football and basketball. He was a three-time All-State selection at running back and won All-Conference honors at linebacker and defensive back. He played his college ball at Notre Dame, where he helped them win the 1966 National Championship and was a team captain of the 1967 team. He was a 16th round draft choice by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1968. During his rookie season, he was drafted to go into the Army to fight in the Vietnam War. He was awarded the Bronze Star and Purple Heart after being injured in the line of duty. Rejoined the Steelers in 71, spent the next 2 years working on trying just to walk again and to regain a roster spot. He was waived twice over that time. He came back and was ultimately a part of all four Steelers Super Bowl championship teams of the 1970s, retired after the 1980 season. Over the course of his career, he rushed for nearly 3,900 yards and had another 1,300 yards receiving, scored 25 touchdowns, and averaged, folks, 4.2 yards per carry. Now, tonight is episode number 413 for us, and Rock joined us all the way back the first time. He was on episode number 2 on September 29th of 2011. That's what a great friend Rocky has been with us over the years. And he joined a show he never heard of with a couple of guys he never heard of. And we can't thank him enough for that. And we are so honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Rock, Chris and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Welcome back, Rock.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. What a wonderful, interview that you had with Jerry Cooney. I caught part of it. I was happy to be able to listen to it as I was waiting for my part to be on the show. But, it was awfully nice to be able to plug his book and get him on the air. So now I'm looking forward to getting that book and reading up. And I didn't know that much. About Jerry and his background. And, you know, it's an amazing thing, when you have people like that on your show that you bring to your listening audience and the stories that they have, you know, and it's all about those stories and what people overcome to achieve something within their lives. My God, Jerry really did overcome a lot when you think about the life that he grew up with and had. So I feel humbled to be able to follow him in this discussion. But anyway, how are you guys doing? Good?
We're great, Rock.
Yes,
so, ready. Rock, on that same storyline, and most people know about your time in Vietnam and the things that you dealt with there. I don't know that enough people know what it was like for you trying to make the comeback. I remember listening to an interview that Joe Green did, and he talked about how when you were working out and trying to come back, about how your whole body would turn purple, and he would look at you and say, you know, if he can do that, the rest of us don't have anything to complain about, and we need to work just as hard as Rock is trying to work. Talk about what it was like for you after you came back, trying to make it back and be a part of the Steelers organization again.
You know, I think one of the driving points in comeback stories, when you get a chance to talk to those people, And I don't know whether you can put, you know, a finger on it specifically, but I think the commonality is that there is a certain driving force. There is an end result. There's a goal or something they want to achieve or how they see themselves within that role. And I think that becomes very important. So at that time in my life, the one thing that I wanted to do was to try to be able to come back and play this game of football. Now, along the way, and let's be honest, you need to have some break or a chance or an opportunity that can propel your career in some fashion. So in my case, no matter how badly I would like to come back and play, no matter how badly I wanted or would work out or do what was necessary, you still need to have somebody say, okay, fine, I'll give you a chance. I'll give you an opportunity. That, of course, was the Rooney family to begin with. Specifically, you know, Chuck Knoll. I think he went along with whatever the Rooney family said at the time. And so they got to come back. And I suppose that my drive was the fact that there's only things that you can control. You as a person, you can only do what you can do. So in my case is that I can only do I can only get up. I can only work out. I can only put time in to the gym. I can only do these things. Time needs to heal the injuries or whatever. The final decision is left up to somebody else. But I think that part of that driving force was that I didn't want to get to a place. And I think that underneath most people who overcome obstacles will say to themselves, I never wanted to come to a point in my life that I look back and said, I should have done this, or I should have done more of this, or I should have trained harder, or I should have, you know, lifted more weights or whatever it is. If you can erase those ifs, then as difficult as it may be, you can go on with the rest of your life. Part of that then is the breaks that happen, the opportunities that exist, being at the right place, right time, whatever you want to say, then occurs. And so in this case, it was the Steeler organization, maybe capturing the imagination of the Rooney family, but they did give me an opportunity. I came back that first year, and whatever reason, they put me on injured reserve after training camp. And I had another operation, and it was really out of the kindness of their heart to be able to do that. And they thought, well, maybe I could come back and play. And the following year, I came back in a pretty good training camp, but pulled a hamstring, and they put me on the taxi squad. So I hung around for another year. And as I tell people, what they really bought me was 2 years of an opportunity. 2 years to heal, 2 years to hang around, 2 years to get bigger, stronger, 2 years to somewhat impress them of the changes that had taken place. And by 1972, you know, I come back. And as I tell people, I was the leading ground gainer during the exhibition season that year. So in the quest of things, I made the team. And all I did, never carried the ball, but played special teams. And so that was the first opportunity. And then the following year, and then the following year. And along the way, hopefully you can make enough impressions or get a chance. And then things happen. Somebody gets hurt. You get a chance to play. Then you fit into a system. It becomes mature. And, you know, then all of a sudden they need a blocking bat because of how we run the football. And I fall into that category. And I'm not going to make mistakes. I might not have the size or the speed, but it's somebody that they can count on and make sure that, you know, that whatever they ask is going to get done. And then the rest becomes history because of the team, because of the players that are on it, because of the Hall of Famers that come off that team of the 70s, 9 Hall of Famers. And I'm happy to ride their coattail and be a part of their success.
So, Rock, is that how the chance came? They needed a fullback, they needed a blocking back, and someone turned to you and say, Rock, get in there. Is that how it happened?
Basically, you know, so, you know, the following year, I was a leading ground gainer again during the exhibition season, got to carry the ball once. The following year, I was the leading ground gainer during the exhibition season. Again, this was 1974. And, you know, and I was the fifth running back out of 4, as I tell people. At the beginning of season 1974, then all of a sudden, you know, DeFranco Harris gets hurt, the backup becomes the starter. I become the backup to the backup, which is pretty good. I had never been there before in my years of playing. So with renewed vigor, you play, you know, the first game, second game, third game, fourth game, as a backup position on special teams, and all of a sudden the backup gets hurt in the fourth game. And I'm inserted in the game at fullback. We get a chance to play, and as a team, you know, we win the game. And so the following week, we get a chance to play. The other running back was Preston Pearson, who finished his career at the Dallas Cowboys. As a team, we win that game. You know, so then Franco gets healthy. I wasn't pleased about that, but anyway, so Franco now becomes healthy. I'm going to be sitting on the bench again, but that's okay. At least I got a chance to play better than I've had in the past. And we had our pregame meal prior to that game. And, you know, the coach goes around the table and says who the starters are. And he said, Franco, you and Rock will start tonight. I was confused. I didn't know how we both could play the same position at the same time. When it dawned on me, I was going to play the other one. And the primary reason was that Chuck Knoll, unbeknownst to me, said to our backfield coach, you have a weakness in your backfield. Who is your best blocker? And they said, Flyer. He said, well, then start him. And I got a chance to play and start, and we started the remaining part of that season, won the division, went to the playoff, won the playoff, went to the Super Bowl for the first time, and won the Super Bowl. And then we played six more years together, won three more Super Bowls. And then after 11 seasons, I retired in 1980. But it's just being in that right position at the right time, fitting into a situation, or an organization that needs or fits your needs. You know, you look back and you say it worked, you know, for whatever reasons, and you're just happy to be there.
Rock, one of my favorite stories that I've watched you tell on the America's Game DVDs was how you were standing on the sidelines, you know, earlier on in your career, kind of giving the team the rah-rah thing, and Chuck Knoll turned around and looked at you and said, we don't do that.
That's right. You're right. And so, you know, and so in Chuck's whole case, you know, and I have to tell you this, and it's probably in reference of what we see today on the field. And I've talked to players, not necessarily former players, but fans, and especially the Me Too generation that is on that field, that no matter what they may do, they're all pounding their chest, you know, or displaying some sort of animation about what they had just accomplished. They could be losing, they could be behind, but I make a tackle, I get a first down, then all of a sudden it's all about me. Now, in Chuck's case, was that the most important thing was this team, and it was natural reaction. Now, he didn't mind, you know, if you did something well, and you jumped up in the air and you screamed or something, but something manufactured of that push, or being on the sideline, you know, of that idle chatter that sometimes we had coming at that period of time, you know, and trying to support your guys. He didn't like that stuff. And so he said, we don't do that here, you know. And so I got the message very quickly at that time, because it had to be instantaneously natural emotion about what had happened or how excited you were. That was okay, but nothing that was manufactured. And I thought it was a great lesson in my life and things that you learn by playing the game of football, indoor sports, that kind of stick with you, much like you had mentioned.
Bob, questions for Rock?
It's great to talk with you as usual, Rocky. And I don't believe we've spoken since the documentary came out last summer. The return when you went down to Vietnam, and it was very powerful with Tom Rinaldi, and I was very emotional just watching it. And I think the half hour format, Rock, was better than maybe a 2 hour thing, because it just got right to the point and it didn't drag things out. It was just terrific. Was it something, Rock, that you really, really had to do now you're looking back on it? And tell us maybe something that we didn't see in the 30 minutes that came out of it for you.
You know, I think part of the explanation is that, and maybe the understanding, is that ESPN had contacted me about going back. And it wasn't a need. I didn't have a need for closure. I didn't have a need to go back for any specific reason, but except for the fact that it might just be a good experience, and it might be on ESPN. Okay, so we went, and I told them, and I think maybe I might have mentioned this, but I'll tell your listeners tonight, and I told them at the time, I don't know what to expect, and I don't know what you expect, only because of the fact that, you know, I had been telling this story for the last 40-some years about coming back. Unlike the majority of combat veterans who had returned from Vietnam during that period of time, who had to repress their feelings, had no outlet to talk. Nobody cared. The public, you know, denounced them and spat upon and thought lowly of them because of that war in Vietnam. They had no place to go. Nobody cared. There was a American Legion or a VFW, and so they repressed those feelings. They never talked about it with their family or their children. And so I said, I became a story. So on the other hand, everybody asked me questions, and so it was somewhat of a catharsis. And I really didn't have any trauma about that. And I went back, not knowing what to expect. But it was interesting as we drove, and this was probably the subconscious part, as we drove from Da Nang to our place of battle, which was about an hour and a half drive, sitting in an air-conditioned van, driving on a roadway after 50 years of change, driving on a roadway, a busy road. They had cars, motorbikes. There was buildings going up. There was commerce taking place. There was hustle. There was bustle. There was villages. There were jungles. It was rural, metropolitan rural, you know, as growth would take place. And we're driving by a hillside. And I asked what that was, and they pointed out, and they said, well, that was LZ West. And LZ West was a landing zone in which we operated from. And we would take sweeps off that hillside, come down into this valley, looking for Viet Cong or Vietnamese or NVA soldiers, and, keeping things safe or quiet within that area. And I'm thinking to myself, wow. I mean, there wasn't any of this during this period of time. And, you know, and so it was just there. That was just kind of there. And when I was in that rice paddy, eventually that day, Tom Rinaldi asked me the question, how do you feel? All of a sudden, from the soles of my feet up through my body, came this emotional rupture that I had no idea where it was coming from or what it was about, that physically just broke me down and started to cry. And I couldn't grasp it. I don't know why that took place. And it just like flushed my system. I didn't feel well, and I felt weak. And, we have to go sit down or something, like, you know. And I did sit down, and I ultimately passed out, and then came to. So there was a big hustle bustle about this emotional impact that had taken place. And it wasn't until maybe a day later, 2 days later, as we're coming back to that same area, going over the same stuff, that what was the reason for the breakdown? And I think that the reason, as I said, as I was standing there, as of why? Why? you know, because Vietnam really hadn't changed. I mean, the reality is Vietnam is still a communist country. It's a police state. Although we have great relations with Vietnamese and they love Americans and it's a hustle bustle growing community of society. But why? Why did we lose 58,000 men? For what reason? Except for a treaty that pulled us in the early part of the 60s from World War II with France. Because France got their butt kicked and, you know, and wanted to come back and reclaim territory that they had before that because of a president's decision sending advisors over because of another president that wanted to expand the war because he was told that we could win this war. And it goes on for 7 years and 58,000 people die. And that became the emotional crutch. That was a breakdown. And so as I look back on that experience, to some degree, maybe it was a cleansing, to some degree it was, coming to terms with that whole period of time. And maybe it was something I needed to do. But it was still, an emotional reaction, an emotional question that a lot of veterans maybe have not come to terms with, and still suffer some, you know, mental health problem, depression problem. And, as you see that our suicide rates have not dropped for those who have served and continue to be like 22 a day. So, So I think that is all part of it. But that's what I kind of learned from, that experience. And so I'm happy to have gone back and maybe go through that.
I just thought that was fascinating. And as far as I know, been back and when you, came back, I mean, the Rooney family who have such a great reputation, I would think they've been very, very supportive of both your efforts there and your service to the Steelers. Maybe just a little thought about how they ran that franchise over the years.
Well, you know, and you're right. And it's not something to do. I should say that the Rooney family, from the chief to his son Dan, passed away, to now Art the second, who is running the operation. I mean, they have a sense of community. They understand family. They understand what people are all about, and they're very supportive of their players, of their fans, and still give back. They are very, very supportive of military personnel, of salute to veterans, that at every game that they have a veteran on one level or another, from now the, war on terror coming out of Afghanistan, Iraq, current deployments, people who have been injured, lost limbs, that they showcase and they, you know, and present. As a matter of fact, this game coming up against Buffalo, they will honor a young soldier who was in 113 explosions as a forward observer, a bomb detonator, who collapsed. They found out the reason he collapsed was he had a broken neck, spine, ribs that he never complained about. Never complained about at all. And so they're going to present him his Purple Heart, and he will be getting, Super Bowl tickets, all expenses paid by the Steelers to go to the Super Bowl. So, but that's the kind of, you know, family that they are, to make sure that people are recognized for their contribution to their community and to their country, and the service that they provided. So yeah, they're, it's really a terrific family.
And Rock, speaking of veterans and depression problems, and you're obviously heavily involved in supporting organizations to help veterans. I know you're doing some great work with Guardian Angel Medical Dog
That's
Services.
Right.
And talk about what that is and how more people can get involved along with you with that.
Well, yeah, Guardian Angel Medical Service Dogs is an organization. They're in Florida. Although they're trying to create and move and build an operation up here for them in Western Pennsylvania. And specifically because I know them and so I support them. But when you take organizations, and there are a lot throughout this country, just not on companion dogs, but on medical service dogs. And the amount of training that goes in to these dogs, and this one specifically, or this group, Guardian Angels, is a German Shepherd breed that are trained and then paired with soldiers that have mental illnesses and or that they can detect when you're in a panic mode, if you're having nightmares, will wake you up. They can calm you down. So the interesting statistic in this regard, that on all the studies that have taken place and how to help people, specifically, you know, with mental health problems and from post-traumatic stress, as we were talking about, the divorce rates that have increased, multiple deployments that take place now today in our military history, that pressure that is put on individuals and then the families, is that Guardian Angels and other organizations like them who have service dogs, Guardian Angels specifically has 300 dogs, that are deployed, with veterans. Out of those 300 dogs, they have reduced suicide rate to zero. And divorce rate
wow.
to less than 1%. And so, if you look at that in a microscopic way, you'll go, wow. I mean, if that's what can be done, then, you know, what's a life worth? So a life is worth the amount of money it takes to train that dog and to be able to give it to a soldier in need, so that he may fulfill and live his life to the best that he can, and change his mental outlook because of a service dog of this nature. So that becomes my passion in that regards. Specifically, you know, you have statistics that show that this can happen. You know, now we got hundreds of thousands of veterans and so on. But anything that I can do to help raise money in that regard that has those kind of statistics, then I think it is, you know, very worthwhile to be able to talk about and to be able to get that message out that there is a chance and an impact, you know, that can help it. And more importantly, an awareness that is taking place. And that becomes the important thing. Because also our first responders, our firemen and our policemen have the same kind of statistics that our military. A lot of them come out of the military and join those organizations. The stress and strain that they go through, that people don't understand or don't see, have the same result, even higher result in divorce rate than military personnel. Suicide are the same. And so if there's two groups of people that are so important to our community that aren't thought about, because only 1% of our population serves our country, from a military point of view, is that then we need to do something about it. And so this was one way I felt it has a pretty big impact on the lives of the people that are fortunate enough to be able to get a service dog. And so anything that I can do to support that helps. And one of the ways, and this is a blatant, I'm going to tell you, you know, a blatant sales press, is that the Fighting Back, my special edition of the book that I've written, proceeds from that book go to Guardian Angels. And so come out with a brand new book. Well, it's not a brand new book. It's the same book, but I've added new chapters at the end, written by a very good friend of mine, Gene Collier, who's a writer here in the Pittsburgh area, and is a wonderful writer. And some fresh pictures and so on. So it's a new tale, of an old story, that, is around. And I plug it only because of the fact that, and the reason we redid this book is that I'd run into people. Well, some of them are younger than me. Some of them are my age. And they would go, you know, the first book I ever read, the younger people would say that. First book I ever read, I was in the fifth grade or seventh grade or junior high, was Fighting Back. I had to write a story on it. So it was a sports book. So I took it. And then all of a sudden they said, oh yeah, you know, I gave it to my son. I don't know what happened to it, you know, my grandson should read that, you know. So now all of a sudden there's another generation. I thought, well, maybe they should read the story as well. So we came up with this new book. But more importantly, I think the important thing is that, you know, some of the proceeds of that goes to help supporting, that initiative of Guardian Angels. And the book is also, so, I'm going to tell you. So if you order the book now, there's free shipping. I'm going to, Christmas right around the order. If you order now, you get free shipping and guaranteed to get the book through the mail by Christmas. And I can extend it 2 more days until the 15th of this month. And so by the 15th, well, then I can't guarantee a Christmas delivery. But then I also, well, I should say that you can go to fightingbackforveterans.com. That's the website, and order a book from that. And get it out to you. The second thing is we also have an audio book that I narrate, that is brand new, that just came out, as well. And you can get that on audiobook or iTunes, or Amazon.com. And that you can just download right away. So, there's a couple ways of being able to get that book, of one nature or another before the holiday. You're looking for a Christmas present at the end. Much like what Jerry was pitching, you know, in his book. So now you got a couple of guys pitching books, but that's okay.
That's it is. Just a couple more before we let you go. We can't spend time with you without getting your thoughts on the Steelers right now. And I tell you what. The videos that you do, One Man's Opinion, are absolutely outstanding. I look forward to those every week. Give us your thoughts on the Steelers right now.
Well, first of all, Chris, get a life. That's right. Looking forward to my One Man's Opinion. But anyway, so for those Steelers fans that are out there listening as well, you know, and so you look at the, you know, and so, so I, my last, One Man's Opinion. And basically what I was talking about was, you know, if you look at one of my things I was talking about last year, I did a rant. I went off the rail, unlike me, about, this team that really frustrated not only me, but I think the Steelers fans. I mean, you had great talent on that team. You know, ultimately you had to, you know, an all-pro running back, a Hall of Famer quarterback last year. AB was still on the team. Juju was coming in. We had passing game that was going. We had an offensive line. We had a defense that had big questions, and big holes, you know, but they would be ahead, then they would lose the game. They'd miss a field goal and then they'd lose the game because they gave up points later on. And it was a mismatch. It was like individual. Sometimes you get a team, and I'm going to tell you, sometimes you get a team where you think, well, somebody will make sure it happens. AB will get open and we'll win the game because that's what we've done in the fourth quarter, late, big charge. You know, Ben somehow will win this game for us, or somebody will make a big catch or whatever it is. And they didn't do it. And all of a sudden you become frustrated. Because they didn't close. And it was like individuals rather than a team. And it started out this year as well. And then Ben got hurt. And then we're trying, you know, formulate a team. The defense, you know, was now called upon. And so we made some changes there. And now all of a sudden, with Duck at the helm, and we got, you know, running backs, and we got people that have stepped up in their position, and have carried the load and have done their job. And not big names, names that the majority of people don't even know who they are as of yet. And all of a sudden we got a defense that is playing as a team. Now we got a team that is playing as a team rather than individuals. And they're all pulling their own weight, and they're making crucial catches, crucial tackles, knockdown plays, not giving up a touchdown, and hanging on and winning, you know, with a third string quarterback, and with a rookie running back. And so it'll be interesting to see in these remaining games what takes place. Buffalo's coming into town. Big game. I mean, it's a big game. Thank God it's a home game here. So hopefully, given what has taken place over the growth of the last three games, you know, is that the product that they'll have, and if they don't make big mistakes, you know, that, you know, Buffalo is beatable as any team. But even if that is not the case, even if they go and lose the next three games, what I've seen is not a team that beat itself at this moment in time. They may be beaten, just because of personnel, on opposing teams, but they're not going to beat themselves like they did a year ago when they had the talent to be able to dominate and to win. And so that becomes, I think, for me, the most exciting thing on the development of this team as it moves forward towards the end of the season. Hopefully they can win two of these, you know, last games, win one of the last three anyway, and maybe put them in a position to be a wild card team for the playoffs. So, but it's up to them.
And Rock, just a couple more comments before we let you go. And I know a few things that are on my Christmas wish list this year. Some of the things that you're partnering with Steel City Brands. They've got some Rocky Blyer inspired shirts, and like I said, they're on my Christmas wish list. Talk about your partnership with them.
Well, thank you for agreeing. I forgot about so Steel City is a manufacturer here and the distributor of shirts, and they've come up with four different shirts, with my face on one, number 20 on another one, American's Hero on one. It's a little embarrassing there. But it's a great design. It's something that's out there where the proceeds of that t-shirt will go to Guardian Angels as well, to the service dogs. And so, we're anxious to see how that plays out. So, well, I'm glad that it's on your list. I hope Santa thinks that you're good enough to get one.
I hope so, too. Hey, Rock, we can't do a segment with you without giving a shout-out to our good friend Gretchen Bierenbaum, D-Money. He's been a great friend of the show for many years. I'm glad to see the two of you working together.
Yeah, she's a dear and she's a doll. And thank God. And Gretchen has taken me out of my old age, you know, to in this world of communication. And it does my media for me and advises me what to do and where to go. And she's full of spitfire. And she's become a dear friend. And I thank her very, very much for holding my hand, leading me into this high tech world of being on the web. So it's great. So yeah, so great shout out to Gretchen for all she's done for me and for other people.
That's right. Brock, let our listeners know how they can stay up to date with all the great things you're doing, whether it's online or it's on social media.
I wish I knew. They can call. One easy way for me is that they can go to my website, which happens to be rockyflyer.com. Oh, my God, that's so easy. Anyway, that's one way of being able to do it. And, so we're tied up into social media. And I'm trying to think of, where else, that we are. And so, yeah, so we're out there. Now I'm going to get a call from Gretchen as soon as we hang up and she's going to say, what are you fumbling about? I'm old and I forget. We'll be on Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever else that is out there.
There you go.
Let's go.
At Rocky Flyer on Twitter and on Instagram and on LinkedIn. Absolutely.
That's what I was thinking of. Instagram. That's what I'm on. Thanks, guys.
Rock, always a privilege for us to get to spend some time with you. We hope we get the opportunity to catch up with you again real soon. In between now and then, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to you and your family.
You too, Chris and Bob. Thank you very much for allowing me to come on and eat up most of your time.
You stay
thank
well.
Thank you. Until the next time. All right. We'll talk. Thank you.
See you, Rock.
Good night.
That's a great Rocky Flyer, Bob. You know, certainly the best storyteller of all time. There's no question in my mind that Rock is the best. And when he talks about his book now being, you know, reissued with a couple of new chapters and having an audiobook version where he does the narrating, boy, if that doesn't have you clamoring all over yourself to try to figure out a way to get that and get it downloaded, I mean, that's fantastic stuff. I can't imagine a better audiobook than that. And then all I can say, the great stuff he's doing with Guardian Angel Medical Dog Services or Medical Service Dog, the work that he's now partnering with Steel City Brands, the book and all the stuff that he does for veterans. Outstanding. Absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, all great causes, Chris. He gave us a good 35 minutes tonight. And the other show that I appear on Tuesday morning, a lot of people were interested in his appearance tonight and they wanted to hear more about his return to Vietnam. So I'm sure that's going to be an emotional time when I send people this interview to hear that. And it's really amazing, that whole story. I would urge people out there, first of all, to watch that 30-minute documentary and then to hear Rocky's comments a few months later. They really hit home. It's an honor to speak with that man.